Production. Recorded live.
Good evening, every all, and welcome to Unzipping Reality. I'm Leah LaChapelle, and today is February the 8th, 2015. So, us love us, everyone. Let's have a good time tonight, because we're going to really have some unzipped reality tonight. I was just telling J.P. Sears, who is waiting in the wings, you know, if it's not fun, I'm not really that interested. We need happiness and joy, and not triviality, but the real laughter. And I am so excited about this evening's broadcast, because I am anticipating learning some things tonight and getting to laugh. So that's what we do here in what J.P. Sears calls the newer age, and you know, I just have to say how I came across J.P. Sears. I think everybody remembers the exact moment that they came across J.P. Sears's YouTube channel. You know, it's an auspicious moment when that occurs. But my friend Tobias Lars, who I love dearly, who is actually more than a friend. He just was bestowed the Unzipper of the Year Award for 2014. And so congratulations again to Tobias Lars. Tobias is who turned me on to J.P. Sears. So I will forever be in his debt. And so thank you so much for that, Tobias. And the reason Tobias showed me this YouTube channel is because, is because it makes a difference. The Ultra Spiritual series that J.P. Sears has created is making a difference, and it's got people's attention. So I would refer to J.P. Sears as kind of the Dana Carvey of the newer age. Just very reminiscent of Dana Carvey and his brilliance. And in fact, I've been hearing some comments in anticipating this broadcast tonight, and one of them is, "Hey, this guy reminds me of Dana Carvey on SNL." You know, that's big. that's a very big compliment, and that was from Mark in San Antonio. And then my friend Liz here in Austin, where I'm broadcasting from, is saying, "You know, we take ourselves way too seriously. I love this guy." And then Chandra from out on the West Coast is Facebooking that she loves him. So does that kind of set the tone for the evening? I'm just going to get our engines revved now and remind all of us that reality is now sufficiently unzipped. It's plenty unzipped for us to at least see the portal, recognize that the portal is open. So my invitation is for us to step on through and be who and what we really are. So to help us do that this evening, my guest is J.P. Sears. He is a holistic coach, a mentor to other coaches. He's a workshop and retreat facilitator. And as I alluded to before, he is an ultra spiritualist. His website is innerawakeningsonline.com, innerawakeningsonline.com, and you're going to absolutely, I insist, you've got to go to youtube.com/awakenwithjp. You have to do it. You've got to get in on his ultra-spiritual spirituality. But in all seriousness, J.P. Sears is a nationally known and internationally known teacher and coach. He's highly acclaimed for his heart, the way he feels, his dynamism, and his entertaining style of delivery. He runs a private practice in Charleston, South Carolina, where he specializes in emotional healing. Thank you so much, JP. And the purpose of JP's work is to empower people to live more meaningful lives as whole individuals by guiding them to move beyond their symptoms of pain and sabotage so they may discover and reconcile their inner imbalances. JP Sears, thank you so much for joining me on Unzipping. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leah. I am very happy to be here with you, and thank you for the glowing rendition of who I am. I think I sound like a pretty cool guy with everything you just shared, and I can probably assure you my shadow side is as dark as the light side you just read. So thank you for ignoring the shadow side and just telling people how cool you think I am.
Exactly. Thank you so much for that. The golden shadow and then the other one. Yeah. All right. So everything I said, I have no reason to doubt. You are up to good things in life. So I just came across your latest YouTube video thanking people, and that feels really good. So you're welcome. You're welcome that you now have 20,000 viewers on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Leah. Those viewers, those 20,000 subscribers that have really tuned into my channel in a relatively short period of time. My channel is, I guess, less than 2 years old. I'm really flattered to have this community of people who are like-minded, like-hearted, and like-souled enough to be interested in my version of the unzipped reality, both from a humorous and a sincere place. And I'm just humbled beyond belief by these subscribers I have, the growth that seems to keep coming, and I think over a million views my channel has had. So that definitely makes me feel pretty humbled.
Definitely, yes. Do you have a YouTube video out there, How to Be Ultra Humble?
That has not been done, but I think how to be ultra humble done in a very arrogant kind of way would be a great idea.
I do too.
I might just want to offer that.
I will watch for that one.
And I will pay you the royalties on the title.
Oh, that is so great. Well, I just want to give a little bit of background. I already mentioned how Tobias Lars is who turned me on for the first time. And then I was very busy crafting an article that is about the new archetype for this new paradigm that we are the ground floor members of. And it was an article entitled The Prevalator, and the second part was 22 Things That Prevalators Do. And it's just kind of a hybridized word for people who are reaching for that next place of, you know, how to experience themselves in the new paradigm, how to kind of put out their inner revelation in a prevailing paradigm that comes from within, how to present that. So I was just having fun and calling it the Prevalator. And so searching for some graphics to include in my online article, I needed a graphic that was representative of like a New Agey kind of practitioner that used a whole lot of props, you know, just unmistakably a New Ager. And I couldn't get away from the image that J.P. Sears had out there for his How to Be Ultra Spiritual. And there he is in his adorable little headdress thing and with his his Tibetan bowl and candles and so forth. And so I did contact JP and asked his permission to use his image in my online article, and he very graciously granted me the permission and also agreed to come on the show. So that's just a little background, and I love how all this bridges around. It's so much fun, and I see that the chat room is filled tonight, and so I just want to offer anyone who would like to pose a question, if you're in the chat room or if you have a comment that you'd like for me to shuttle over to JP Sears, then just don't hold back. We don't hold back on this show, JP, okay? So let me just ask you a question right off the bat.
Sure.
Facebook makes me crazy. I just want to ask you, what is the best way to utilize Facebook so that you represent yourself authentically?
Mm.
How do you do it?
Well, that's a great question. And maybe to state the obvious, at least it's my opinion of what the obvious is, I'm guessing that Facebook or any other form of social media, it's not going to be able to properly, entirely convey our authenticity because, of course, it's a incredibly one-dimensional snapshot of reality. We post a status and maybe here's a picture and that's that, and we do that once in a while or maybe too often actually. So, I think realizing that there's going to be a limitation of authenticity that can come across on Facebook. So, but at the same time, how to be as authentic as possible on the form of Facebook. That's a great question. I like to keep in mind the light side and the shadow side, which I believe we all have. And some of us are addicted to portraying ourselves as just the light side. Here I am. I'm always smiling ear to ear, and life is just good. And, conveying a persona, maybe it's a fraction of who we are, and maybe it's an incredibly filtered expression of who we are based on what we think people are going to approve of the most. And, of course, that screams 90% or so of the rest of us out of the equation that we don't present. So, it's a great question you pose, Leah, and I think it's a little bit of a dilemma. And maybe as we struggle with that, I mean, if that's not a riddle of our time, I don't know what is, but maybe we can keep in mind posting a bit from the light side, shadow side. What are my successes? What are my struggles? As a way of keeping it a little bit more real on this lovely thing called Facebook.
Do you think people want that, or do you think they want the starry-eyed version?
Well, I think that's another great question. I'm guessing what people want and what's perhaps more therapeutic are perhaps two different things. I would guess most people want the starry-eyed version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why we love to admire sort of a reality TV or reality portrayed on Facebook, because it's a form of escapism. At least it can be. So, of course, tuning into how wonderful life is for other people and how glamorous it is, I think some of us do want that and want only that. And I think one of the challenges when that's what we want and that's all we want, I'll unfriend you if you get a little bit too real with me with the click of a button. I think one of the couple of the reasons why that can be a little bit of a trap is, one, I mentioned it can be a form of escapism, and then two, I believe a lot of people, including all of us actually, have some level of addiction to shame. I think it's part of the human condition. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's inherently a bad thing or a good thing. Yet, when we only want to see the starry-eyed version of Facebook or anything else, it can be a way where we are unconsciously setting ourselves up to shame ourselves. Let me see how great life is for everybody else so that I can shame myself that my life doesn't seem as great as this very filtered out, glamorous portrayal is. And, you know, there's different studies that are coming out showing how some people are getting more depressed as they look at Facebook because they feel more inadequate about their life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting consideration, Leah, and I know you're a in-tune thinking person, and probably more important than you being a thinking person, you're a non-thinking person too, and I'm curious what your opinion on that very interesting question is.
Well, thank you. It is a conundrum for me. I use it for promotion for whatever it is that I'm doing. I don't use it for just expressing every thought that comes into my head or my heart for that matter. So it's a real fine balance for me. And again, referring to my friend Tobias Lars, he's pretty masterful at it because he is willing to put his trash out there too. Mm. And he says that it keeps the really hot babes at bay. So he does it for self-protection. So I really appreciate his example. I don't know if I have the courage to do it just the way he's doing it, but well, thank you. We'll just keep massaging that and considering that, and I want to encourage you to continue to use it to get your materials out there because it's that important. People want to know themselves, and if they can do that through knowing J.P. Sears, then well and good. I have a question in the chat room, and Wah would like to know a little bit about your own awakening. I guess maybe that's interesting. Tell us about how did you wake up, and what age were you?
Well, my version of that story about myself is I wouldn't consider myself woke up. I don't have a pinpoint in a time where I became awakened. I think that's a little bit of a self-induced trap where we kind of get a little ultra-spiritual, at least from my perspective about myself. Mm-hmm. And decide, well, I'm woke up now, so I've done that, so now what else am I going to have to do? Whereas I think our egos love the idea of a destination. Tell me when I'm awakened. Yet, as the old proverb says, I think it's our spirit that is really invested in the journey rather than the destination. So with that little control drama of mine, based on my opinion laid out, when I became aware of, oh boy, I'm starting to do some waking up here in life, I would have been about 20 years old. And at the time I was studying with a mentor on, when I was that age, I was doing exercise stuff. So I was studying with a mentor of mine named Paul Check, and he said, hey, why don't you read this book called Conversations with God? And I read that book, and it might as well have been written in a different language, threw it on the shelf. I don't know what it was. A couple weeks, maybe a couple months later, I picked that book up again, and I don't know what changed, but I was just calibrated into the book. And I drank it in, and my experience reading Conversations with God is one of those things where it's like, I don't think I'm learning anything new. Everything he's saying, that stuff that I already believed to be true, I just didn't know that I believed for it to be true. It's kind of like pulling something very, very familiar out of a deep closet that I forgot I had. So that really got me pretty intrigued. And from that point, around that point, I started working with people, clients to who were seeing me for their own emotional healing, their own awakening, and that further facilitated my process. And I have to admit that I think when my awakening began, a lot of it was fueled by what's quite honestly a lot of arrogance, where I was thinking, well, let me keep learning, taking workshops, reading books, because I want to help other people, and boy, they sure need some help, don't they? And, you know, now looking back, I'm like, wow, I think my principal motivation of helping other people was because I was projecting my own need for help onto them. And, you know, of course, everything I was studying, I desperately needed. I had my fair share of wounds throughout my early life and beyond that. But, you know, of course, the more wounded a person is, typically the more numb they go, the more asleep they go. So, there I was around 20 and then got into deeper healing and eventually, I don't know, things in my experience tend to begin to sort of exponentiate, take on their own momentum. It's sort of like once we do a little waking up, we just can't go back to sleep. You know, my story, it's a little bit sloppy, a little bit all over the place, and certainly very progressive. It certainly wasn't the kind of cool setting like there I was sitting on a park bench eating feeding pigeons, or how eating pigeons for that matter.
For 2 years.
Yeah, the old Eckhart Tolle thing, which I think his story is a little more entertaining.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm guessing, you know, I'm 33 years old today, and I'm guessing when I'm 66, I'll probably look back to 33-year-old JP and say, gosh, I sure was asleep back then.
Oh, my goodness. Did you say today?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
Are you 33, like, today? Is it your birthday?
Oh, no. My birthday is April 12th. But
okay. Just checking.
Until then, I'll be 33.
All right. What a great age. My goodness. So you're there in Charleston, and you're pumping out these videos, and it's catching on, and people get it, JP. They get it, and you're not afraid of being vulnerable. And, you know, preparing for this show tonight, I was thinking, yikes, this is really making me vulnerable to get out here on the airwaves with this guy, J.P. Sears, you know. He's fearless. He's okay with whatever. And so I thank you for placing me and others in this space. It's a lot of fun, and it feels good. It feels like aliveness to me. So what is a bliss bunny?
Well, that's a great question. You know, my definition of what a bliss bunny would be is perhaps someone who looks to bypass their humanity in favor of either connecting to the spiritual world, it may be a very genuine connection to the spiritual world, or perhaps in favor of at least believing they're creating quite a connection to the spiritual world. So bliss bunny, that's a term I like. It kind of flows, kind of rhymes, even though
I love
it doesn't rhyme at all. And I think principally what I consider a bliss bunny is someone who is in denial of their emotions, and they're in denial of their denial, and also someone who's in denial of their neediness, you know, their human neediness, both physically, emotionally, and mentally. In fact, I think kind of the Bliss Bunny archetype, if you will, that someone who's so needy, they have the need to not be needy. So they are living under a probably very constricted consciousness level of belief that says I'm not needy, when in fact perhaps they're the punchline of their own joke. And their belief of I'm not needy is perhaps a symptom of how needy they are.
So are you telling us that it's actually all right to be needy?
No, that's not right. And by the way, men, they're not allowed to cry either. It's okay to be needy. Is that still tastes like sour grapes to me. Yet it's something I still am doing a lot of work on, learning how to be okay with my neediness.
Yes.
You know, our neediness, of course, it comes from our humanity, our mortal body, as well as our, what I would call our ego, which, as much of an illusion as it is, it sure is a persistent one, and it sure does subscribe to the illusion of death. And, you know, out of our need to survive, which I think is probably a pretty important need,
mm-hmm.
You know, our needs are going to be there. And I think the question is, can we be vulnerable and connected and accepting of them? And also how other parts of us are perhaps relatively needless, or are we going to be in denial of what our needs are? And for me, an interesting thing about a need is it will get met. The more we deny the need, the more the need gets met in a very misdirected way, enough so that we don't consciously recognize how it's getting met. Yet because the need needs to be met, and it will do so, the more it has to take the misdirected route because we need to not be needy, that tends to create a lot of chaos, a lot of self-sabotage. In fact, I do a lot of work with people on the theme of self-sabotage, helps us go into their minds and hearts. And I believe most, if not all, cases of self-sabotage can be boiled down to misdirected needs getting met in a way that the person doesn't recognize how the need is getting met.
That is marvelous. Misdirected needs getting met.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so in other words, it's not okay to be needy. That means you're weak.
But fortunately, we have all these coaches out there willing to point all this out. So I've got a couple of questions in the chat room. One is, do you feel it's your purpose in life to awaken other people, or are you just enjoying? Are you doing your coaching as a result of feeling an obligation to spread the wisdom you've learned, or are you doing it for personal satisfaction and pleasure?
I think yes to all of that, to be honest with you.
Good.
And, you know, there's a needy part of me that needs to stick my claim in that you know, I think one of my kind of proverbial life purposes is to continue to awaken and heal and grow myself and connect a little bit more to who I am and where I came from. And, you know, a very important companion in that is other people as well. Whether I'm delusional or relatively clear on it, I do feel a very strong flow of purpose through me facilitating other people working on their awakenings, their growth, their healing. Not that I'm doing it for them, but to me, keyword, facilitating their process. And then also, I would like to be honest with all of that, rather than just making myself sound like a saint. So this next part, Leah, we'll have to edit out because it'll make me sound like a human. You know, there's also parts of my ego that are very gratified by the illusion that I'm helping other people. I think the reality is they help themselves. The best I can do is help them to help themselves. So, you know, my ego has some dysfunctional enjoyment out of what I do. And I think my heart, my soul, and other parts of my ego have a lot of functional enjoyment, as I do believe I'm letting the purpose of my life flow to, you know, the greatest degree that I know how to in the moment.
Yes, I love your answer, and thank you so much for that. I see on your website, and the website is innerawakeningsonline.com, that you have a group, a self-growth, inner healing group that meets, what is it, once a month maybe, there in Charleston. And it's free. It's a meetup group, actually, and it's free. So you're really doing something out there for free?
Absolutely.
Yay.
And,
I love it.
And the reality is I get a lot out of anything I do for free. So I think there's plenty of payment in what I learn from other people who show up to the free community gatherings. So there's a lot of benefit I get. And certainly keeping it real, there's plenty I do where there's a price tag attached to it. Is, you know, this is how I earn my living.
Right. Well, just so you'll know, here in Austin, Texas, we're all about community. Mm-hmm. And I myself am part of a very robust community. And we're just like falling down drunk, happy about it. and so we pretend like we're doing it, whatever it is, and we're just having a blast. And so it's a beautiful mirror for us, and happily a lot of those people have tuned in tonight, and so y'all know who you are, you circle people. So thank you very much. I love you all. So I want to commend you for having a sense of community there in Charleston, because that's very near and dear to my heart. I think that anyone can sit on a mountaintop and appear spiritual. It's when they get down in there with other people that you know, the proof is there in that kind of a pudding. Mm. So I want to congratulate you for that. I have another question for you. The nice young woman in your videos, who's kind of the straight man who plays the role of the straight man. Who is she?
Are you talking about the recent videos, Leah?
Well, I guess the one that, you know, I guess How to Date Spiritual People.
Oh, yes.
Ultra Spiritual People. I think she's in your Ultra series.
Yes.
You know, she's the one that is not JP in the...
Yeah, that's right. She actually is not JP. Well, I'm lucky enough to be able to say that is my girlfriend. Her name is Deanna, and she is absolutely weird enough that she puts up with that kind of stuff. She lets me sit her down at a table, and she's willing to say goofy things. I don't know what's wrong with her, but she does things like that.
I've wondered that.
And,
well,
you know, she...
I...
Uh, amongst the other blessings she does, like aside from giving cameo appearances in some of the videos, she's also my camera woman. She's a professional photographer and videographer, and she does all my filming. That's a great blessing. It allows my videos to look a lot more amazing than they would if I filmed them.
Is she Third Wing Productions?
That would be her, Third Wing Productions. And
awesome.
And she's also developing her art of doing emotional coaching. She's got one of her wings now into that, along with her photography and videography. So, you know, she's a wonderful lady to accompany in some of the videos, accompany me in some of the videos.
Absolutely. Hi, Deanna. Hey. Yeah, I love her
too
already.
JP loves you, Deanna.
That's really, really great. So I wish her well with Third Wing Productions. I see her really expanding, of course. JP, I have another question. This is from your coaching section, because you actually mentor other coaches, and thanks for doing that. Mm-hmm. You have a quote on that tab, and it is this. It's your quote: if the coach cannot go beyond the ways that others coach, then perhaps their practice becomes a way of losing self.
Mm-hmm.
Could you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. And I think it's fun. I quote myself on my own website. Let's just check one in the narcissism column.
You should. We love creative. We love originality. I think it's wonderful you're not quoting Deepak Chopra there. Thank you.
Well, to quote J.P. Sears, and absolutely. So what I mean by that is, you know, a coach or a therapist, anybody who's in the helping profession, whatever title you put on yourself, I think there is a reason why you, the unique individual that you are, with your mind, your heart, your soul, your catalog of life experiences, there's a reason why you are here on this planet. And I also believe there's a reason why the exact clients who come to you, why they come to you and not me, not anybody else. And I think it's because you, the coach, have unique gifts to offer. So when I mentor coaches or run coaching education programs, it is essential to me to let people know I will be sharing with you ways I currently do things. I'll share with you what hasn't worked for me, what seems to work for me. Your job is to use the parts of it that resonate with you, and even the parts that resonate with you, throw them in the trash as soon as you can in favor of doing things your way. And I realize we all need, as you know, for coaches here, coaches need a level of structure in the beginning, because a coach says, hey, I'm a newborn coach. I don't know how to do coaching, or I'm looking to take my coaching to a newer level. So that's why we go get education. And I think our education works against us if we try and become a robot or mimic our mentors, if we're consciously or unconsciously trying to meet what we think might be the mentor's expectations of how we're doing our coaching. So to me, it's an incredible burden that I always invite people to outgrow. In fact, there was a client of mine. He's a coach over in the UK, and he was talking to me recently in a session about how an old mentor of his, who he did a lot of great education with, and he was saying, you know, I was listening to a recent lecture of this guy, and you know, the things he was saying, they just they feel so outdated to me, and those kind of techniques I just haven't been using lately. You know, my heart hasn't been called to it. And I said to him, I'll be really excited when you're saying the same thing about the work I'm doing with you.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. I get it. What do you think about certification?
I think it has its time and place. It's something that I've got some certifications. And I think the credentialing and the profession of coaching, it's not a highly regulated credentialing process, which has its light and shadow side. So, you know, I think it shows a level of credibility, yet I certainly wouldn't advise potential clients to select coaches based just on credentialing. And also at the same time, for coaches, my opinion is the perhaps optimal way to do things is get the right amount of credentialing for you. Don't get too little. Give yourself the structure and that kind of validation you want, as well as maybe what the marketplace will want from you. Yet, maybe be wary of not becoming a credential junkie. It can certainly put us on a path of trying to become the perfect one, perhaps trying to seek the ever-elusive sense of validation from outside sources. Well, you know, now I got my 99th credentialing, and I'm almost there. I'll finally feel like I'm enough once I get the 100th. And I think also too much outside education, as weird as that sounds, can actually be an experience that dims the light bulb of us developing our authenticity. It can dim the light bulb of our intuition. And at the same time, I think not enough outside education can dim those same light bulbs as well.
Right, right. So do you have some sort of a system that if people go to one of your retreats, then they're automatically certified to teach just like J.P. Sears?
No, I don't at the moment. I have coaching programs that are specifically designed for coaches that I've taught in the past. I've also, actually last year, for a group of maybe about 30 or so health coaches in Denmark, I taught a 15-week Beyond Self-Sabotage coaching certification. And when the time is right, I will be looking forward to making those offerings to the much wider audience of the general public and coaches. Yet right now, listening to my, or better said, paying attention to my inner compass, the time isn't right for me to energize those pathways of being a prime source of coaching education or certification for others. That's very appealing to me, actually. I can create things in my head far faster than what they can be.
Yeah.
Appropriately supported on the outside. So as a way of sort of respecting my inner compass that says the priority is to take care of the priorities, I'm having to put the coach teaching on the back burner for at least a little while.
I see. Yes, I hear that. I have a question in the chat room. Someone is asking, how do you personally deal with having engaged with someone who is obviously in a dark place and possibly toxic? Do you understand the question?
Yeah.
I guess it's like in the aftermath, how do you deal with that? And also, how do you deal with someone like that?
Sure. And, you know, I would guess there's certainly not a one-size-fits-all answer, so I'll give perhaps a couple sizes of answers. I think a very real life lesson that a lot of us are faced with way more than once is the opportunity to create boundaries. I think if there is, a transfer of toxicity, emotional, mental, whatever form it is, that can be us being invited by life to affirm boundaries. Mm. And, of course, a lot of us will maybe have some guilt, shame, kicking our butt, like, oh, my gosh, I engaged with this person, whether romantically or business or a conversation. So we might be punishing ourselves a little bit for it. And honestly, we don't know we've had our boundaries crossed until we allow them to be crossed. So I think being very vigilant of, am I being called to affirm healthy boundaries here? I'd want to consider that for sure. And then also another consideration is, okay, this person, as unpleasant as they are, and perhaps as much as they're not going to be in my life anymore, they've shown up in my life for a reason. This engagement, we had it was purposeful, even though it might not have been enjoyable, even though it might have been toxic. Oh, what was this person here to teach me?
Mm-hmm.
I think our inner wise person that we all have will probably have a lot to say about that. And then, of course, I also like to look at everybody as my mirror. Well, better said, I don't like to look at other people as my mirror, yet I think it's very beneficial.
Uh-huh.
So, I would invite everybody, maybe even myself, if I'm willing, to ask, okay, based on my experience of this person, if they are actually a clear mirror for me, my perception is they're showing me toxicity, disrespect. What does that say about me? Are they perhaps expressing something that I have, but I repress it? So I convince the outside world and my own self that I don't have my version of what they're expressing. But has this person shown up in my life to actually teach me, yes, I have that, and it needs to be worked with? Not necessarily I need to go bleeding my toxicity out onto everybody else, yet just like a physical toxin, we might have heavy metals inside of us. We don't know they're there, yet they can be doing damage. So perhaps we have some of our own emotional toxicity inside, and we needed an outside mirror to teach us, yes, I have my version of whatever I'm seeing in that person. Maybe not a literal version, yet that's why we ask the question, what's my version of it?
Right. Yes, I understand. And I was just going to offer that, of course, you can always inoculate yourself by being ultra-spiritual. It's very popular these days. Very popular.
I love that.
And it's very powerful. Yeah. I recommend everyone try it at least once.
I think that's it's quite a prescription you're laying out there, Leanne. And actually, maybe we, more than just inoculating ourselves, we can only hang out with other ultra-spiritual people. That way we'll never be challenged.
Completely safe. That's right. That's right. Prophylactic ultra-spirituality for everyone. Great.
And before too long, everybody else will think we're living in a commune and we're part of a cult, but... luckily, we won't see that because we'll be too close to it.
We'll protect ourselves from having that notion. Oh, that is just wonderful. You know, this time with you is just, I'm just having a great time, and I want to make sure that I don't hog all of your attention. I do want to open up the phone lines for anyone who'd like to have a little interface with J.P. Sears. And the way we do it is if you're on the line and you have a question, then I would just invite you to speak up right now. Is that okay with you, J.P.?
I'm all about it. Absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So does anyone have a question or a comment for J.P.? I know you're out there. Just speak right up. Well, maybe not. Maybe not right now. There have been a lot of questions in the chat. Someone is asking here, what are your future plans? Do you even know?
No, yet I have an opinion of that. I love, I think Joseph Campbell said, man plans and God laughs. And, of course, I want to give God some laughs, so, of course, I have plans. And I also have curiosity about how will it actually unfold. So, as of right now, on the sort of the professional front, my plan is to be consistent with YouTube. That's kind of like my canvas that I paint on, at least one of them. Mm-hmm. I don't have traditional like art skills of painting. That's never really been my thing yet. There's a lot of, I think, creativity and art that I just really enjoy putting into the YouTube videos. And that's something I want to keep doing. It's something very important, something I'm excited to see grow. And, of course, as it grows, more opportunities tend to sprout up from it. And aside from that, I want to be continuing with my one-on-one client practice, doing retreats around the world. And
would you like to tell us a little bit about your Australian retreat that's coming up?
Oh, I would be delighted. I appreciate you mentioning that, Leah, and actually as I'm listening to my plans, I'm thinking that's actually all the stuff I'm doing right now, yet I'd like to keep doing what I'm doing, yet allow the expression of it to evolve and be open to doing what I do, yet in ways that are changing. So I'll be curious about that. But yeah, back to the little shameless promotion here about my Australia retreat. The theme for that retreat is strong relationships, and we'll be using specifically tools of compassionate communication as a way of helping ourselves and all who are at the retreat find ways of strengthening our relationships, both, I would dare say, the relationship we have with ourselves, as well as the relationship we have with important people in our lives. And I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe this is going to be a 5-day retreat. And this it's the same location that I held my Australia retreat last year. It is on a stunning beach. It's Forrester's Beach, which is about an hour and a half north of Sydney, and it's a beautiful house right on a cliff overlooking this very secluded beach. And, I mean, of course, in the water, it's all kinds of things that can kill you, but just looking at the water is beautiful. So it's a very serene location. And, my experience last year was, there was a magnificent group of people who showed up there. And I'm looking forward to this year. There just seems to be something magical about the location as well as the lovely folks who tend to show up. Australians and Australia, it's a beautiful people and a beautiful part of the world. And it's having a retreat there is a great excuse to go down.
No kidding. Oh, that's just wonderful. So it'll be 5 days. And so, do you incorporate any sort of holistic health, like physical? I think that you're a very physically fit person. You seem to integrate your physicality into your whole health approach. So, do you encourage runs on the beach, or what goes on like that?
Well, the physicality, that's redundant, you just said. There aren't formal parts of the retreat where there's physical training, yet there's some open periods where I think, especially the environment that we're in, people just naturally gravitate that sort of thing to that sort of thing on their own. And we will take, some walks together on the beach. But yeah, to be honest with you, the way I run my retreats, they are so full on and intense, at least from my perspective, about piercing into our hearts, our shadow side, that there isn't a whole lot of room and energy for the participants left to spare for much in the way of physical training.
Really? Wow. Well, I have to ask you, do you wear your adorable headdress on your retreats ever, or do you get requests for that?
Well, actually, the last retreat I did in it was Denmark. There were some requests for it. Yet no, I didn't wear it, and I don't plan on wearing it. The retreats are they're in my opinion a very sacred space, very sacred time, and there's a lot of intimacy that happens as far as emotional vulnerability,
Sure.
healing, and spiritual connection. And I absolutely encourage, and I love to laugh and joke around with people, and it's a great time. And at the same time, there's a time and place where that humor, that laughter becomes a deflection of
Yes.
intimacy rather than facilitating it. So that's my long-winded way of saying I tend to keep that headdress in the suitcase for that particular environment.
Got it. I love that. And I'm sure you're familiar with Swami Beyondananda.
Vaguely, not
Yes.
incredibly, but on the surface.
Yes. And Swami, yeah, Swami is a real person, and he does keep those two personas separate. But he's like you. He does have the very well-studied, very serious approach. And then he also has the laughter. And Steve Behrman is his name. And I dig him. I think that he's doing a great gig out there. He's got a real good science mind and works with Bruce Lipton, who I admire very much. All right, I do have a couple of questions here in the chat room. Let's see. One is, let's see, oh, well, someone would like to pose a question vocally. Let's see. Yeah, guest number four, you're up.
That would be me. Hi, JP. It's so good to talk with you.
Hey there, my friend. Oh, could I ask what your first name is?
Yeah, Alan.
Hey, Alan. Nice to meet
Hi,
you, my
Alan.
friend. Yeah, hi. Well, I also am ultra spiritual, and but I also cry a lot, and I have like a lot of challenges in life, and it's very scary sometimes. I'm figuring out that it's like mastery is really a state of not knowing what to do and just being willing to be with not knowing sometimes. But I wanted to get some maybe a little free help from you since you love that so much, and maybe it might benefit others too. You mentioned self-sabotage earlier,
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you if you could go into that a little bit more, maybe draw a picture or an example of what sabotage would look like. And in the realm of misdirected needs, a little bit of highlighting on that as to what misdirected needs might look like and how that might manifest as self-sabotage and what that might look like, rubber on the road. And I'll go ahead and hang up so we can listen on the radio over here at the house.
Thanks, Alan.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that very important question, Alan. You know, what self-sabotage looks like on the surface and how we tend to do it in our lives, the good news is we're all creative people. The bad news is we use our creativity to create countless variations of self-sabotage. I tend to look at the appearance of self-sabotage in several categories: behavioral self-sabotage, as well as feeling-oriented self-sabotage, as well as perceptual self-sabotage. So behavioral self-sabotage might be an example of that is, well, I overeat. You know, I sit down with a tub of ice cream every night, and I snack on candy all day long, and you know,
How did you know that? Get out of here. Do you have a camera in my house? Get out of here.
I do, actually.
God.
It's HD, and it has a very clear picture. and so, you know, those sort of self-destructive behaviors we do, behavioral self-sabotage, and then feeling-oriented self-sabotage. That might be where the self-sabotage registers at a feeling level. So, boy, I have this depression or this anxiety, or I'm always, you know, feeling guilty inside, or I'm always angry. So it's not necessarily a behavior that's recognizable, yet it's a feeling that's recognizable if we have a sensitivity to actually feel it. And then perceptual self-sabotage, this last category for now. This would be where maybe not necessarily anything is going wrong in my life, yet I perceive it's going wrong. I perceive everybody's out to get me. I perceive that I'm a failure, even though I might not be a failure. I perceive everybody else has their stuff together and not me. So the self-sabotage is just based on our perception. Now, those three categories of self-sabotage, you know, of course, we'd want to ask ourselves, okay, what's my version? How, you know, what's my version of the behavioral self-sabotage? Do I do that? Or better said, can I recognize how I do that? All those three categories, they help get us connected to the fingerprint of self-sabotage, yet not the real sabotage. The sabotage that we're aware of, these three categories, for me is always a symptom. The real self-sabotage, the root of the symptom, if you will, to me it's always inside of us. And from my perspective, maybe creating an oversimplification, self-sabotage at its roots is always stemming from an unresolved emotional wound or disempowering belief. So when we're doing things that, you know, behaviorally we're treating ourselves like crap, or feeling-wise we're always feeling like crap about ourselves, or perceiving ourselves in a crappy way, those outer self-sabotage experiences validate the unresolved emotional wounds. They validate the disempowering beliefs we carry. So in other words, we, in our relatively outer reality, the self-sabotage we recognize, we're simply projecting outward a deeper pain. So in my opinion, that makes self-sabotage a very friendly messenger delivering a very important message. Now, the friendly messenger, that doesn't mean we like it. It doesn't mean it's comfortable. Yet if we can look at self-sabotage, not as an enemy, but again, as a friendly messenger, then I believe it's delivering us a gift. It's there to teach us there is something happening inside of me, in my heart, in my mind, in my soul, that needs help. And of course, pain being the best motivator, our self-sabotage creates a given level of pain. And luckily, that's what motivates us to hopefully begin looking at ourselves inside at a deeper level. So with that said, I'll make a long story a little bit short. When we look inside and start to consider, okay, JP, if that's half true, that all self-sabotage is caused by unresolved wounds or disempowering beliefs, what do I do next? And where do those come from? Well, those are great questions. I find probably 90% of the time our unresolved wounds come from our childhood. And so it's a very rich, fertile place for us to look as far as what needs my attention. You know, childhood, it almost sounds a little cliche to say, well, look at your childhood. That's what's causing your self-sabotage. And it might be cliche for a reason. I think there's a lot of wisdom there. And, of course, they call our childhood our formative years for a reason. It's a very powerful influence that forms how our psyches function and how we navigate our life. So particularly as I'm fostering a bit of a general answer for your wonderfully wise question, Alan, generally speaking, what I think gives us the most bang for our buck when we're looking into our childhood for our unresolved wounds, disempowering beliefs, is look for experiences that caused us shame. Shame being an emotion that has a voice that says, I'm not worthy, I'm a mistake. Where guilt might say, I did something wrong, shame basically says, I am something wrong. And self-sabotage, it's a way here in our present-day lives, it's a way we basically shame ourselves. Each time we overeat the tub of ice cream, we have that voice that is there that's beating us up. It's shaming us for what we did. And that's a fingerprint of oftentimes a deeper shame. Again, if I can shame myself for overeating the ice cream, that's validating the vibrational energy of shame that I'm carrying in a deeper part of me. So, and I would also add to that when we're looking for experiences where we felt shame. Shame being such a painful emotion, sometimes it will register as numbness. That might mean I don't feel the shame, but it's there. It's just, it's so painful, it's numb. So I believe our unresolved wounds are basically when we had too much emotional weight relative to what we could carry and digest in that moment. So as a kid or adult for that matter, if I experienced so much shame about, say, wetting my pants at school, that I didn't have the emotional capacity to handle all that shame. Let's say it was 1,000 volts of emotional electricity there in the shame, and you know, my circuits in that moment could only deal with 100 volts of electricity. Well, that's when our psyches suppress and repress what happened. It'll take that shame and bury it because it says that all this electrical energy of it, I can't deal with this right now. So, of course, We suppress it, repress it, we bury it. And much like if we've accumulated a bunch of mercury in our system, it sits there. Just because we don't know it's there, just because we forgot about it, just because we don't necessarily feel it, it doesn't mean that it's not affecting us. So that shame that we couldn't deal with, there's a reason why we're reminded through self-sabotage in our adult lives to go back and help metaphorically our inner child deal with it. It's because today, the adult that you are, Alan, the adult that we all are, we have bigger shoulders, stronger shoulders, and a more developed heart and more inner resources than what we had when we were a kid. So the reason why we would want to go back and revisit unresolved wounds, it's not to say, well, just feel the pain, that's good for you. Well, it's to say feeling pain might be a part of it, but it's really to say, let me help my inner child, because this was obviously too much weight for him or her to handle on their own. That's why I'm investing in this vulnerable, introspective look present day to help my inner child. Therefore, my inner child helps me. If my inner child's no longer enveloped in repressed shame, then of course my inner child is helping me out, because now in my adult life, I don't need to validate that shame through self-sabotage as much. So us helping our inner child really is also our inner child helping us live a bit of a freer, more creative life.
Beautiful. Thank you very, very much. Wonderful. I love that answer. Would you like to have another shot at another question?
Well, let's go for it. I'll do my best to be less long-winded. They say the average human attention span is 11 seconds. So I stopped paying attention to what I just said about 10 minutes ago.
That's just great. And Alan says thanks. Wow. All right. Here's another question. This is from Bridget. She would like to hear your take on a statement that's bandied about, apparently, with some spiritual gurus. And it's the statement, it's the phrase, attached to the unattached.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard that, attached to the unattached?
I haven't heard it said that way yet. That I like the way that sounds. And actually, to me, that sort of points to what I work with in the Ultra Spiritual episodes, sort of the scene there where, you know, kind of here in the New Age, where it's very trendy to be unattached. I'm very unattached to everything. Well, I think what this statement, at least what it says to me, is I become very attached to being unattached. So being attached to being unattached is attachment in and of itself. And to me, there's a greater wisdom pervading there that I think reminds us what we're not reminded enough of, which from my perspective is the path we take to find ourselves can and oftentimes will become the path we lose ourselves on. So I think becoming very focused about non-attachment can be a beautiful, healing wonders in our life. And I think most of us need a lot more non-attachment in our life. And so we're taking that path to find ourselves and grow ourselves. And if we're not careful, if we're not vigilant, if we don't know how to become paradoxical, then we won't know how to also ask ourselves the question of when will this path that I'm finding myself on become the path that I'm losing myself on? So I think attached to being unattached, to me it helps ground us into becoming a little bit more accepting of our attachments that we do have. Don't be so attached to our non-attachments, and maybe we can actually become unattached about our attachments and kind of say, it's okay, I have attachments.
Sure.
You know, I think either side of the coin we can lose ourselves on. So I appreciate that question, Bridget. I have no idea if that's actually the intended meaning of the author of that statement. Yeah, but that's a little bit of delusional thinking for you.
Yeah, she says yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, we made ourselves coming and going, it seems. There's another question here in the chat, and it has to do with becoming more awake. Do you feel that the more awake you are, the more you can see darkness?
Yeah, isn't that an interesting paradox?
Yeah.
For me, the answer is yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more awake we become, the more we're able to see how we're still asleep. And I think, you know, a lot of people in the more traditional academic worlds, you know, this deep wisdom sort of registers in their world as kind of the experience of, boy, the more I know, the more I know that I don't know. You know, the more I study and learn, the more I understand how little I know. So, and I think the true, genuine path of awakening, whatever the heck that is, I think there's a shadow to that path.
Yeah.
And I think that the shadow that my ego doesn't like is just this. The more awake I become, the more I can see my shadow, what I don't like about myself. So, of course, that means awakening ourselves certainly has its consequences. We can become very displeased. Oh, there's the parts of me that I don't like accepting. Yet, of course, I think as we awaken, that's a little bit synonymous with walking the continuum journey of unconditional love of ourself. And I think unconditional love sort of says, you know, the unlovable parts of me sure need my love, maybe even more than my lovable parts need my love.
Yes. Yes. Well, and back to the darkness, what about the darkness around us? What about the darkness of this version of reality that we find ourselves in society, like a global society? What about that kind of darkness?
Well, I would dare say that becomes more apparent to us as we become more conscious as well. And I would also add, nothing but pure opinion here on this, certainly, that, you know, the eyes we see reality through and the mind that we interpret reality through is very much a relative mind.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're seeing the darkness in the outer world, corporate corruption and all that kind of cool stuff, that's, you know, it's there. I do have to wonder, am I actually seeing the darkness of the outer world, or am I just seeing my perception of it? And is my perception based on how I project myself onto it?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, when we kind of sniff our bliss bunny smelling salts, we kind of remind ourselves, you know, we're all one. So I see the corporate corruption, and it sure appears as though that's them, not me. They're the bad guys, yet, you know, where do they end and I begin? You know, the bliss bunny smelling salts
exactly.
Would say, well, we're actually all one. So I would dare say if that's true, this individualized sense of me that I have, even though I am all one, but the sense of me I have there might be something very important about me that I am seeing as I look at them. So kind of how at the movie theater, if the movie projector had an eyeball on the front of it, all the movie projector sees is what's inside of it. Yet, of course, this it's projected onto the screen. It sure appears as though it's all about the outer world. So just a little food for thought.
It certainly is. I mean, this is something that we go in and out of all the time. It's like, how can we love those guys? Are they us? Do I love myself? Are we all one? Yes, we are. Are you sure? Well, maybe not. Well, I think but we're supposed to be all one. Okay, well, but what about those guys? And we just, it's a loop, JP.
Yeah.
And so I love this work, and it's, I really get it. It's a deep study, and it's designed to lead us to joy. That's my best guess. And so that's what we love to play with. Let's see here. We're coming into the last minutes of the broadcast. I want to make sure that I give you an opportunity to talk about your teleseminars.
Yes. Well, I appreciate you mentioning those. In fact, 2015 teleseminars and live video seminars, those have actually yet to be scheduled. I will make some announcements about those, and I'm very excited. I'm reshaping things relative to how I've been doing them. If you, the lovely listeners, care to be informed on that, feel free to jump on my website. You can join my e-newsletter, and I will be letting you know about those opportunities as soon as they arise.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it's by telephone or Skype?
Well, the way I used to do them was via telephone, and then from there I went into a live video broadcast. So there would be the audio and the visual. So I'll be staying with the video for the next round of those as well.
Okay, wonderful. Is there be associated with that, or would you know?
Yes, for those programs, the video teleseminars, I do have a fee for that, and actually the fee structure is yet to be settled on what it will be for the next offering.
Right. Just so people know. Okay, wonderful. All right, so your website is innerawakeningsonline.com, and the YouTube channel is Awaken with JP. Go to youtube.com. Awaken with JP. So, all right. You seem to know something about centeredness, being centered, staying centered. Can you share some ways that we can help ourselves to stay centered?
Sure. Well, what I'd invite everybody to consider is realizing we have two eyes, maybe for a very important symbolic reason. And I think if we can see anything in our life from two perspectives, the light side and the shadow side, for me it's a powerful way for us to be more centered. Maybe never perfectly balanced and centered forever, but more balanced in our place of centered. You know, when we're looking out at what we perceive to be bad things happening, we're seeing the shadow side. Can we also open our other eye and look for the light side so we're not just polarized by our own thoughts? It's kind of like being in the periphery of a hurricane. It's the most stressful, windiest place to be. But if we can unpolarize ourselves by embracing the light and shadow side, it helps take us a little bit more into the very calm, peaceful eye of the hurricane.
I see. Oh, that's just fantastic. All right, and we have two nostrils, too, and two ears. Yeah, so that works. Very nice.
Absolutely.
Very nice. All right, so people seem to want to know any more retreats scheduled so far in 2015 other than your Australian one that we already touched on. Do you have anything there in Charleston?
Well, I love the fact people are interested in that. Yeah, very soon, please stay tuned. Again, you can jump on my newsletter list. The rest of my 2015 schedule, it will hopefully be out within the next week or two. I'm very excited. Well, I'll have some stuff going in Charleston, some other locations around the country and world. So, yeah, please stay tuned, and if you're weird enough to be a part of any of that, then, of course, I'd love to have you.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Well, all right. I do have one final question for you. Oh, and people are saying, please come to Austin. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be pretty cool.
It really would be. We have some of the most marvelously unique people here. I can vouch for that, I promise. I think they would, I think it'd be fun. I think it'd be a lot of fun. Well, we'll see what develops on that. Okay, so back to your ultra spiritual series that has really taken you to a new level of efficacy in touching people and supporting people. Okay, you've got the one out there on ayahuasca.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very obvious that you know people who have partaken of ayahuasca. You've heard all the stories, and you know the drill. So come on, have you done ayahuasca?
I have not. Let me just actually voice a part of me that says, oh, boy, JP, that means you're a hypocrite. You're doing a video on ayahuasca and you've never done it. And now another part of me is going to play the defense there. The video, from my perspective, and here I'm kind of going to be the artist telling you what the deeper meaning of the painting is. So my perspective is that video had nothing to do with ayahuasca, and it had everything to do with people's behavior around ayahuasca. There actually, on the YouTube comments section, I was catching enough heat and other personal messages that I decided, you know, I'm very okay with people's feathers being ruffled. I think it's very therapeutic. It needs to happen. Yet I was seeing a lot of people who were very defensive about ayahuasca missing the message. And it was a very convenient scapegoat for them to discount my message by saying, well, JP, you know, you're disrespecting the plant and all that cool stuff. Which I think that the convenient scapegoatism was people who have addictive behaviors around ayahuasca were focusing on me criticizing ayahuasca so that they didn't have to actually look at the fact that I'm actually portraying very common Western behavior around ayahuasca. And I personally believe it's a sacred plant. Find a plant that's not sacred, by the way. And I believe that a trap people get into using this very powerful mind-altering plant is because they have their rationalizations about how it's sacred. They believe that however they use it, how often they use it, and with whatever intention they use it, that too is sacred. So to me, there is a lot of people becoming significantly disconnected from themselves by using something sacred in a very unsacred way. I also, you know, it was about a year ago that I moved to Charleston. Before that, I lived 10 years in Southern California, where there's, you know, it's a mecca of New Ageism. So it was so many people, incredibly trendy to throw ayahuasca parties during the weekend. And if you look at how ayahuasca is used by what I'll call genuine shaman in the Amazon, it's a very dramatically different setup. So when I would see the heightened emotional attachment that people would have to using it and then needing to continue to use it, that became very frightening to me. And I started to realize, well, nobody's talking about this. You know, nobody's really sort of reflecting, hey, world, you can lose yourself on this. It's a very powerful experience. And like any powerful, like any source of power, there is a light side and a shadow side. There's a constructive possibility and there's a destructive possibility. So, you know, I think really out of the concern of my heart of seeing people experience over and over and over again the destructive potential of this powerful experience, yet rationalizing it as a constructive experience, you know, I was just called to make the video. And, you know, and honestly, I've had very close friends of mine have their lives become very dominated through their obsessive compulsive behaviors around ayahuasca. And I've also had very close friends of mine travel to the Amazon and have life-changing experiences based on what they report using it. So,
yeah, I think we could all probably chime in on that one.
Yeah, well, and thank you for asking such a lovely question and allowing me to throw a little bit of extra thought into the question as well, Leah.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't let you get away without asking you because that would have been self-sabotage. So there is a guest in the chat. I just want you to know who is saying that they have done ayahuasca and they thought your video was hilarious. Isn't that wonderful? They said they never laughed so hard as when watching that particular video. And also, they would like to get Doug's number.
Yeah,
Doug Molester.
Unfortunately, Doug is a real person, and I'm not about promoting his service, so I'm not going to hand out his number.
What kind of networker are you?
Yeah.
Oh, that is just wonderful. Well, JP, my goodness, this has just been a real thrill for me, a lot of fun, very enriching, deepening. Thank you for who you are being. Thank you for your bravery out there, daring to be you. I commend you for that. And I also commend Deanna. We're just having fun, and you are being thanked all over the place here in the chat for your enlightened humor, for being real, for being refreshing, for being. So that is it for this broadcast. Did you have any parting words?
Yes, Leah, thank you very much for having me on. I'm honored that you'd invite me, and honestly, I've had an absolute blast with you and the listeners. So thank you, Leah, for making this happen.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you as well. All right, everyone. Well, make sure that you do go to J.P. Sears' YouTube channel. It's youtube.com, Awaken with J.P. His website, innerawakeningsonline.com. And you will be living a more meaningful life when you do so. I want to thank all of the listeners, all of the chat participants. You guys are awesome. Very, very wonderful presence tonight. Lots of great energy there, and thank you for that. And I also invite all of you to visit my website, fearorlove.com. I am a personal evolution coach, a personal awakening coach, a personal unzipping reality coach, whatever you want to call it. I'm just here to interface with you in a way that would make a difference for both of us. So that is it for tonight, and oneness happens. It's the great letting go with allowance and balance. So trust the process. Do the process. Be the process. Know the process as we unzip reality. Bye-bye, everyone.